Good morning and welcome. I'm Nancy Northup, and I'm president of the Center for Reproductive Rights. As the Senate debate begins on health care reform, which could happen as early as this week, we are launching the first paid advertising campaign to hit the airwaves since the House passage of the full bill containing the Stupak Pitts abortion coverage ban. The promise of health care reform is expanded coverage and affordability, elimination of denials of coverage for pre-existing conditions, and a new basic package of essential benefits. Yet some in Congress are attempting to use the reform bill as a vehicle for banning insurance coverage for abortion services, coverage that millions of women have today. But health care reform is not an abortion bill. This attempt to roll back the clock on women's health and rights cannot be tolerated. Three key facts to keep in mind during this debate. A majority of private health insurance plans now provide coverage for abortion services. One in three women in the United States will have an abortion in her lifetime. Abortion is one of the most common surgical procedures. Under the Stupak Pitts abortion ban, women would not be covered for abortions in the new health insurance market despite spending their own money to pay premiums. And women who opt into the more affordable public option would be banned from getting coverage for abortion services, even if their own money is used to pay for their insurance coverage. With Stupak Pitts, it would be far harder, and perhaps impossible given market conditions, for private insurance companies to offer abortion coverage for plans under health reform. During the House debate, there were misleading assertions about what the amendment would do and about how it interacts with current law. The anti-choice lobby has also compared the amendment to the current restrictions in the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program. We're here to set the record straight. First, the limits on the benefits in the Federal Health Insurance Program, as you will hear from DJ in a minute, are punishing to women and deeply unfair. We should be debating, instead of what we're debating in this healthcare reform, is how to eliminate the current federal funding bans as they punish poor women and others, including women in the military, Native Americans, and federal employees like DJ, who are seeking to make their own choices concerning their healthcare needs. Second, the ban on abortion coverage represents an enormous and unprecedented incursion into the terms of the private insurance market, as we show in the fact sheets we have with us today and posted on our website. For the first time, Congress now wants to go beyond imposing restrictions on access to abortion on its own employees and those completely dependent on the government to pay for their health care. What's new is that Stupak Pitts would require abortion coverage and regulate and restrict it for people working for private employers or who are self-employed. This massive and unwarranted expansion of abortion restrictions for the privately employed would affect millions of women and their families nationally. It would also violate President Obama's promise that those participating in the reform will get to keep the insurance coverage they have, as he said last week. Third, the provision allowing riders is a smoke and mirrors trick and little else. As we've heard from experts this week and shown in our own research, rider requirements are the equivalent of an outright ban. In states that have such riders, they're not actually made available to purchase, nor are women aware of them or their lack of coverage. It is illogical to require women to purchase coverage for services most of them don't anticipate needing. They do not anticipate a health-threatening or medically complicated pregnancy for which a termination can cost thousands of dollars, which DJ will talk about in a minute. Furthermore, it is contrary to the entire purpose of insurance, which is supposed to be there to pay for the unexpected. The point of our campaign is simple. When you need medical care, your insurance should cover it. We think this simple principle should apply equally to the needs of women and to abortion services, which are a fundamental part of women's reproductive health. Moreover, the access to abortion services is a constitutionally protected right, yet it means little if women who need insurance coverage cannot pay for the services when they need them. Health reform is supposed to provide affordable insurance coverage to all Americans, yet millions of women stand to lose benefits that they already have. Our elected officials must take this moment to stand up and protect women's health care coverage. Anything less is unacceptable. I'll now say a few words about the campaign. The television advertisement we will see in a minute will begin running this week on cable and is being promoted by paid advertising on online media sites. We have also set up an issue campaign website at noabortionban.org, and we are urging our activists and allies to take action and to contact their members of Congress by email, phone, and in person over the Thanksgiving weekend. We are promising and promoting the campaign on Facebook and Twitter as well. Next, we're going to hear from DJ and then show the clip, after which we'll take questions. DJ called the Center for Reproductive Rights hotline to share her story earlier this year, and she has been courageous in allowing us to work together to highlight the issue of how painful these kind of restrictions are for women who have been already dealt and are dealing with trying circumstances. We deeply appreciate her outspoken leadership and willingness to talk publicly about such a private and personal matter. DJ will come up now. We would like to protect her privacy, so no photos, still, or video are allowed. Audio is okay. So if you would like to interview DJ in silhouette after the conference, please speak to our press officer, Dion Scott, who will make those arrangements for you. Are all the cameras off? Okay, DJ.
Good morning. My name is DJ Feldman. I'm a 41-year-old federal employee. I've been employed by the federal government for the last 16 years. In May of 2008, my husband and I discovered I was pregnant. Like any expectant parents, we were both excited and terrified, depending on the hour that you asked us. In August of 2008, during a sonogram, we received the worst news any expectant parent could receive. We're sorry, your baby has anencephaly. For those of you that don't know what anencephaly is, it is a neural tube defect in which the brain and the cranium do not form. It is 100% fatal to the child. If carried to term, these babies die within hours. Most are stillborn, and even more die at some time in utero. When my doctor found out, when my doctor found out about the diagnosis, she called me. She was not in the office. My regular OB was not in the office that day. She called me, and the first thing she did was offer her condolences. And then we discussed that this had nothing to do with my advanced maternal age and what steps we were going to take to prevent this in future pregnancies. Afterwards, we had a discussion in which she adamantly said to me, "You are not going to continue this." There was no doubt in her mind that I needed to have an abortion. In her mind, it was medically necessary. And she said to me, "Well, you can go in tomorrow to the hospital, and my staff will arrange it. I will not be there because I have office hours, but the doctor on call in my practice would perform the abortion. Or, if you prefer, I'm available for you Saturday morning, and I will come in for you." I wanted my doctor, so I chose Saturday morning. We went to the hospital, I gave them my insurance card, and I went up and I had the abortion. It wasn't until 6 weeks later that I started getting denials on my insurance company. But let me be clear. During the time after the abortion, It was not the easy time of my life, like some would have you believe. I woke up crying. In the middle of the night, I would sob at the drop of a hat. I took time off of work, and I sought therapy. Eventually, I was able to heal. But I still believe that the decision to have the abortion was the right one. And I don't even want to speculate on my mental condition had I not had it. It was 6 weeks later when I started getting the denials from my insurance company, and I looked at it, and I was like, well, what's going on? It was then that I actually went back and looked at my insurance coverage. As you can imagine, the last thing on my mind after receiving the diagnosis in the immediate aftermath was my insurance coverage. So I went. It was then I looked back and said, well, rape, incest, and life of the mother. And I thought to myself, well, surely terminating a non-viable pregnancy falls into life of the mother. They surely couldn't have expected me to carry a non-viable pregnancy to term. So I went and I gathered up my medical records, because even then I thought there was some sort of mistake, and I appealed this decision. And a few months later, I got a letter back from my insurance carrier saying, thank you very much. We saw that your baby was diagnosed with anencephaly. Our medical experts determined that you could have carried to term because your life was not in danger. And by the way, you owe $9,000. It was then, at this point, I discovered that it was a matter of federal law. At this point, it never occurred to me, which is a little bit embarrassing because I consider myself to be fairly well educated, that this was a part of my insurance coverage. When I spoke to any of my friends who were also federal employees, they had no idea this was part of their insurance coverage. It was then I got a little bit angry that my health care had potentially been compromised because of politics. And it was then I contacted the Center for Reproductive Rights, saying, do you know what's going on? Are you aware of this? And I spoke to Nancy, and I thought long and hard about coming forward. But I realized, and after discussing with my husband, that I had a moral obligation to do so. I am incredibly fortunate in my life, and my husband and I were able to pay for the abortion that I had, which, in full disclosure, I was able to negotiate down to $5,000. But not everybody is going to be in my position. And so I've been on Capitol Hill talking to the staffs of lawmakers, talking about the unfairness of this ban, talking about what I went through, and hoping to get this ban lifted, because I felt I needed to show how unfair, that abortion is not for the irresponsible, as we are sometimes portrayed in the media. I very much wanted to have this child, and I still needed these healthcare services. So that's why I'm here today, telling you that we need to do something, because somebody like me will always have access to reproductive health care, but I am not the norm.
Thank you. We're gonna now show the video, and then we will take questions.
So I think laughter is the best medicine, but that's because I can't afford health insurance. I wrote a healthcare reform joke. You wanna hear it? So this woman goes to her doctor. She says, Doc, my back is killing me. Does my insurance cover a breast reduction? And the doctor says, yes, it does. Okay, a guy goes to his doctor. He says, Doc, I can't breathe out of this side of my nose. Does my insurance cover a nose job? And the doctor says, yes, it does. Another woman goes to her doctor. She says, Doc, I'm 11 weeks pregnant. My baby has anencephaly. Parts of its brain and skull are missing. It's fatal. Does my insurance cover an abortion? And the doctor says, ooh, no, it does not.
Don't let Congress ban abortion coverage. Millions of women already have.
All right, DJ and I are available to answer any questions that you have. Yes.
Carol Joffe from Ms. Magazine. First of all, I want to thank DJ for coming forward. Just speaking personally, I appreciate it so much. And DJ, this question for you. You mentioned that you went on Capitol Hill and you've talked to lawmakers. Could you give us some sense of the reception that you got?
Well,
excuse me?
We need you at the microphone, please.
Can you use the microphone?
The
reception I got was actually very positive. I was fairly fortunate. I was talking to the staffs of lawmakers, and for a lot of them, this is their coverage too, as federal employees. And some of them were completely unaware of how these restrictions are applied. It wouldn't occur to them that these restrictions would apply to them when. And some of them were aware of the ban and were completely supportive.
Can I ask, does this include Republicans as well as Democrats or pro-life Democrats?
I talked to some pro-life Democrats. I did not talk to any Republican offices.
Thank you.
I'd like to back up and ask you, what was your reaction to the pro-choice women leaders of the House allowing the Stupak Pitts Amendment to go forward in the first place? What has to be done to mend relations with them, the Speaker and Mrs. Slaughter, for instance?
Well, we were very disappointed that basically the last-minute strong-arm tactics of the anti-choice Democrats forced the hand to where we got a week ago. The prior CAPS amendment was a compromise. It was a compromise on the part of pro-choice supporters, both in the House and in the public, because we believe that actually abortion coverage should be part of the insurance program throughout. So it was the last minute maneuverings by the Catholic bishops and others that allowed it to go through. But I think now what we're going to see is that in the Senate and also in the House, we're going to hear from pro-choice Americans, and part of the reason to do this ad is to help people wake up and realize how unfair it is. So I think it is a whole new game as we go forward in the Senate, because now pro-choice Americans are paying attention to what the anti-force choices forces in Congress are attempting to do. Yes?
What about the language in the Senate Finance Bill? Can you live with that?
The Senate Finance Bill, which has basically the CAPS language, that is a compromise. And we have been willing to accept this compromise, which basically says no federal funds will pay for abortion coverage, but people's private contributions to their insurance can pay for abortion coverage. It's a compromise, but it's one that we've been willing to live with, so that the importance of getting health insurance for the millions of Americans that don't have it, and for getting rid of the troubling systems now, like pre-existing conditions, can go forward. So this compromise, which basically was not one that either the anti-choice or pro-choice forces would have wanted in their own agenda, but it's a compromise. And so that compromise language should go forward so that we can get health reform done. And this is not an abortion bill and shouldn't be treated as such.
Do you have a feeling for how things are looking in the Senate? Obviously, there are members who have already said they want to offer the Stupak language in the Senate. Where are your prospects for being able to defeat that?
Well, I think it's early in the game. And so launching this ad, our colleagues are also revving up the troops so that the senators hear from us. I think it's too early to say. Sure. It is going to be on cable coming up this week. We also have set up a noabortionban.org website. We're going to set it up through Twitter and through Facebook. And we are enthusiastic that our supporters and those of our colleagues will be sending this ad virally throughout the internet. It's going to be easy to send on and on and on and on and on so that Americans can understand the unfairness of the abortion ban. All right, we've got no more questions from here. Again, talk to Dion if you would like to interview DJ in silhouette. She is happy to talk on the record, on camera, in silhouette. And thank you so much for coming today.